Welcome, y'all, to the United Nations of Horror. This here is Jason, and I'm riding along today with Mark. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm not going to even attempt an accent. There's no way. Let me give it this try. Hey, I'm doing great.
I think I was more like Chicago gangster, but you know, excellent try. A for effort.
That's the best I can do. That's all right. That's about it.
But when you've lived in the South as long as I have, you know. But today we're going to be talking about some interesting films, and I'm sure our audience can already probably tell we've got a little country theme going on here.
We certainly, well, it's country and it's, well, actually, no, there's some country in one of these films. There's also, we're talking westerns. Now, we were going to do this earlier, wasn't we? But Prey landed in our laps and we really couldn't resist. And Weirdly, Prey is kind of a horror western as well. And
I agree.
It's also, you know, it just come out, so we felt the need to talk about it. But now we're going slightly older. Movies, well, quite a bit older movies, horror westerns, and the films we're going to cover, and one of them's got a numerous titles. I'll use one now, but when we get to it, we can talk about all the titles.
One's
called The Shadow of Shikara, and the other one's called The Burrowers. Now, I just want to talk about why we're watching these films. I'm reading a book, and I think I may have talked about it before. Sean Hogan wrote a book called England Screaming, which was like a fictionalized account of English history suffused with things from horror films. So, for example, a chapter would somehow intertwine two or three different British horror films and make them one coherent story. But there was a theme running through the whole book, which was Damien Thorne, who, you know, The Omen is set in Britain. You know, so mostly, I mean, it does move to other places, but there's an awful lot of British in The Omen, certainly in the first and third films, right?
Absolutely.
Damien Thorne is interweaved. But other characters in that book are things like the Duke de Richelieu, Quatermass, Dracula, even, because Dracula does come to England in one of the Hammer films, Taste the Blood of Dracula. It's a really good and interesting read. Now, Sean Hogan brought out a sequel to this, which is just as good, but it's about American horror films, right? And it's called Twilight's Last Screaming. However, it's a great title. The first several chapters deal with the Old West. You know, we're talking American history here, so it deals with horror westerns or westerns that have a horror adjacent feel, right? There's a lot of vampires, because if you actually look into it, there's lots of vampires and similar kind of characters in westerns, right? So there's quite a bit of that, and also cannibals. And so, for example, Ravenous is a big deal and went its way through various stories. I don't want to spoil the book too much, because if you can get it, read it. It is terrific. However,
reading the first book, and it is tremendous. I love the way the stories are told, like while referencing these films. It's just really
a genius thing,
you know.
And I'm reading it slow because I am watching the films that he references that I haven't seen. I'm not going to watch the ones I have seen, but I'll watch the films I haven't seen that he references, because he seems to know a lot about... I thought I knew about horror films, but this guy is on the next level. He references very obscure horror films, and some of them have been amazing, absolutely amazing. I think, how have I never heard of this film? So I'm quite encouraged through that. And I just want to plug one little thing while we're talking about it. And we don't often talk about other podcasts. We sometimes do, certainly the ones that sort of spawned us. But Talk Without Rhythm podcast, every year El Goro, who does that podcast, does a 31 Days of Halloween, and he does 31 horror films he's never seen throughout every day of October. And it's a brilliant listen. And I looked at, he posted his list today of what he's intended to do, and I'd say at least five, possibly more, of the films he's covering are from Sean Hogan's books. They are ones either in England Screaming or in Twilight's Last Screaming. And I did post a note. I said, look like several of these come from here. Is this a coincidence? And he says, no, it's not a coincidence. So he's deliberately, he is reading the books. In fact, I think I first heard of the first book on one of his Facebook posts. That's how I got to know about it. So, you know, good news travels fast. When you've got a good book or whatever, people hear about it. And this book, these books are tremendous. Anyway, to cut a long story short, two of the films referenced in this book, the American one, the Twilight's Last Screaming, were horror films I'd never seen or even heard of. And I decided to watch them. In fact, I watched several, but these two in particular I really liked, and I think I recommended Shadow Shikara to you, not particularly for Golden, but say, give this a watch. And then I also told you and Becky about The Burrowers. Then we sort of started talking about, should we do this? Should we do an episode on this? And that's how this came about. It's from those books. So just want to repeat, Talk Without Rhythm is the podcast. If you want to hear El Goro talk about four or five of the films that are covered in that book. Now, I don't think he covers either of these, but he does cover all sorts of other ones. But we're covering these ones, so that's okay.
Very cool.
Right, okay. So that's the background.
And this isn't the first time we've visited Westerns. It's been quite a long time, though. I know we've talked about Ravenous before. I'm trying to think. I know we've done some
A Ginger Snaps trilogy, because the third one's set in the Old West.
I haven't seen
it. It was a long time ago.
We may have mentioned it on here even, but I haven't seen those films, actually, which I know that's one I need to get to. You know, werewolves and everything, but
they're interesting films. I like all three. The first one I think is the best, but they've all got interesting things to say. Those all three of those films. There may even be more than three now. I don't know, but I'm trying to think what others we covered. I mean, you know, in terms of there's silly ones like we've talked about Grim Prairie Cows, haven't we?
We did talk about that. Yeah,
there you go.
I wish
there's
was
one.
a better copy available, as I think we've mentioned on the show before.
I managed to get a DVD of it from Germany. It's got a really weird name, and I can't remember what it is, but when I watched it, it was pretty much the same as the one on YouTube in terms of quality. So it's like, I was so disappointed.
Well, apparently that's the case with Shadow of Jakara as well. There's just not really a great print available.
A good cover. Which is a shame.
Yeah.
Shall we dive into the first one then? Shall we? Got to hear some of the names of this movie, right?
Let's do that, and then let's maybe circle back around to some other horror westerns as well that we've kind of talked about previously.
Okay. Well, some of the names for this movie are Shadow of Jakara is the first one, but it's also called Demon Mountain. The Ballad of Virgil Caine, which is quite an interesting title, which I'll come back to when we start talking about the film proper. Thunder Mountain, which is a nothing title, isn't it, really? Wishbone Cutter, which makes sense, because that's one of the main character's name. And The Curse of Demon Mountain. So there we go. Yeah. Written and directed by Earl E. Smith. So written and directed by the same guy. So what were the other westerns you were... have you got any others?
Just a few, you know, that I wanted to just mention. I don't know if many people would consider this a horror film or not, but High Plains Drifter is kind of just a mean-spirited Western. And, you know, I think it's got some horror elements to it.
I mean, it's almost like a ghost revenge story, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then,
it's a restless spirit story for sure.
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of a ghost story, right? I don't know that we talked about that one before, but one I know we have talked about is Bone Tomahawk, and I love that film. Also, Near Dark, I think, Mark, I'm not sure if you were on for that one, but I know Becky and I covered that a long time ago.
Because the head vampire, kind of, Lance Henriksen, was from the American Civil War, if I remember rightly.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so yes.
And he's got a mullet going in that film, you know.
Yeah. Interestingly, Outlaw Josie Wales and Near Dark are referenced in this book.
Really? Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, and somehow, if I remember rightly, he ties up the stranger in High Plains Drifter with Dirty Harry. Both played by Clint Eastwood, of course.
Awesome.
And that's quite amazing, right? That is quite amazing.
It really is.
Yes. Another one that's kind of referenced in the book that I got a feeling we may have talked about is The Beguiled. Have we ever covered that?
Which is another Clint Eastwood film. Yeah, I think we've mentioned it, but I don't think we've covered it. And I do agree great that film. It's kind of a horror film.
Great film that many people haven't seen. Great film.
One of my favorite Clint Eastwood films, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Clint Eastwood's... People forget how good Clint Eastwood was. I mean, yes. And he kind of gets forgotten, but he was... like, I've looked at things like who was the biggest box office star... of each year. And Clint Eastwood was like the biggest box office star for like 20 years straight, which is kind of unbelievable.
And also the quality he turned out.
He's a great director. Good.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
And the films he makes, Out of Jersey Wales, also referenced in the book, is amazing. And I really love it because there's all these monsters and, you know, creatures and vampires and stuff in this book, but they all talk about Outlaw Jersey Wales in hushed tones. He's like the John Wick of the old West, kind of. It's like no one messes with Jersey Wales.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is, and they sort of say he's faster than a rattlesnake. You do not mess with Josie Wales. And like a lot of the characters, in fact, Wishbone Cutter in this book knows Josie Wales. They were on the same side. They're both Confederates. So, they kind of know each other. So that's kind of interesting. I'm going to stop talking about this book, but it is worth. If you're fascinated, if you know a lot about horror films and you want to hear an interesting, fresh narrative about some of these films, and it's not just horror films he weaves in, he weaves in dramas, standard dramas and all sorts, as well as horror films. Outlaw Josie Wales is not a horror film, but that's in there. So Wishbone Cutter in this film knows Josie Wales. Wishbone Cutter in this has a terrible reputation. People are scared of him. But he's scared of Josie Wales, right?
And you know what? I agree with that. I think I would be scared of both men, but Josie Wales, he's the more frightening of the two.
Yes, because he's not mean, but you mess with him, you're going to die. There's no... No. Like I say, it's like the John Wick of the old West, kind of. Anyway, to get into the film a bit... made in 1977. Unfortunately, this is only available on YouTube, but that can be fortunate because you can get to see it for free. I have watched it twice on a fairly big TV using the YouTube app, and it was acceptable. After the first five minutes, you're kind of okay. The only problem being the darker scenes is sometimes a bit hard to see what's going on. However, I think the quality of the work comes through.
I do too. Opinion.
Yeah.
I agree.
We're not going to go for it scene by scene, but interestingly, it starts with like a big battle where the Confederates are clearly trounced. They're clearly beaten. This is the end of the war, pretty much. And there's a character played by Slim Pickens, of all people. Slim Pickens, probably best known for being like the main henchman in Blazing Saddles. You know, that guy. Ditto, the guy that said Ditto, that guy. He's got a great voice. He was also in Doctor Strangelove, right? Famously in Doctor Strange. He plays a character called Virgil Caine, and they also played the song "The Night Old Dixie Went Down." Was it Burned Down or Went? That song by the band from the 60s that plays on this film right at the beginning, and I was shocked that what looked like a fairly cheap Western had that on its soundtrack. What about you?
I was too. I was like, oh, wow, this is actually... But I did think that scene, that opening scene, is a really great way to start the film. It's really done well with a lot of quality and care.
And you can tell these guys are getting beaten. There's cannon fire and people dying and all sorts. And Virgil Caine, this character, Virgil Caine, dies. And, of course, the first line of the song, "The Night Old Dixie Went Down," is "My name is Virgil Caine." So they obviously named that character after the song, right? And I don't know if that Virgil Caine is a real person. I don't know enough about American Civil War history, but he dying, and he tells this other character played by Joe Don Baker, Wishbone Cutter, about this mountain where there's special rocks and it's diamonds, basically. And in fact, I think when the West, when the film starts, there's a little insert card which says the only place diamonds are found in North America are a small area of Arkansas. And it gives a little background, doesn't it?
Yeah, really interesting little opening tidbit there.
Yeah, and I've no idea if that's true, but that sets the scene.
I don't either.
And he basically tells Wishbone Cutter where these stones are. Now, pretty much everyone else has died in the war, apart, you know, in this battle, apart from who I think he was like a Native American tracker stroke. I don't know. He was tied to the Confederate battalion at Wishbone. He knows him. His name's Moon. I think he's called Half Moon, but he calls him Moon, I think, a lot of the time. Yeah. Good actor. Good actor, right? It was very well acted.
He's almost like the Tonto here, you know, to the Lone Ranger. Although I wouldn't say Wishbone is the Lone Ranger at all.
Articulate and can handle himself as well.
Oh, yeah.
But he's clearly subservient to Wishbone Cutter. But it's not a master servant kind of relationship. It's not that kind of thing. They're kind of friends. Yeah, there's respect, but Wishbone's in charge, right?
Right, absolutely. And I think he likes being in charge. He's he definitely seems like kind of a man's man, if you will. You know.
I quite like Joe Don Baker. You don't see him in much. He's in a lot of 70s heavies kind of TV and movies. I've seen him in a few things. It's been in a couple of James Bond films, and in one he was like a CIA kind of liaison guy, and then in another he was one of the bad guys. I think in The Living Daylights he was this bad guy that was obsessed with war games. If that helps.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. That was him.
Now, I was like, I don't think I've seen this guy before, and I may have. I'm sure.
It's good. He seems like one of those actors out of time. He feels like he should be in 50s movies.
Oh, yeah, he's also in Magnificent Seven, apparently.
Well, there you go.
He's a drifter in that, so I would have seen him before.
Yeah, I don't remember him in a moment. It must have been a very small bit part. He's got one of them looks about him that looks like he should be in a 50s hardboiled detective movie, maybe. Something like that. He's got that look about him to me.
He's also Walking Tall.
Okay. Okay.
I did not realize that. That's quite a famous movie here. Kind of a exploitation film. You've probably seen it, Mark, but
Is it like Billy Joe or something like that? Is it one of those kind of films? It kind of the name rings a bell.
Kind of. I mean, he essentially plays a sheriff in I think it's the Southern United States, but he's like righting wrongs and he's trying to get these gambling establishments out of his town, you know.
I like the sound of that. Yeah.
It's good. Like he's against racism and, you know, I think it was made probably in the early 70s.
Same sort of time as this. Right. Yeah. So 4 years before this.
Absolutely.
And essentially it's those, and they know there's a diamond, but they want someone who actually knows what a diamond is, right? To be sure. Which is weird. You think they go and get them and then come back to town and sort all that out. But they go find this guy, played by Ted Neely, who is an actor who played Jesus Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar. Who's a diamond expert to come with them. So there's like three of them. And along the way, they pick up Sandra Locke, who's kind of been attacked or something, and that they kind of rescue her. So, honestly, I think Sandra Locke helps a bit, but not necessarily just because she's in it. It does have a bit of a feel like Outlaw Josie Wells, this film, when it was made about the same time.
Yeah.
To me.
Actually, I mean, I was kind of between that and a spaghetti western. Like, did you get any spaghetti western vibes?
There was, from the dodgy characters they encounter, because spaghetti westerns famously have slightly odd-looking characters scattered throughout, don't they?
So, absolutely. Yeah.
She's called Drusilla. On this journey, though, they also Wishbone Cutter goes back to his own house, he encounters his wife, but she's shacked up with a northern soldier, a Yankee. Yeah, she's shacked up with a Yankee. This stood out a little because she was in full modern makeup and it looked a bit odd in this, you know, everyone else is like properly, you know, West and dirty, and she's got like full makeup on. And she basically tells him to get out, and he's okay with it. He's like, okay, if you're going to be like that, I'm off. And then they go off, and basically it's their adventures in the Old West. They're kind of making their way towards this mountain, but they keep encountering odd people. They encounter these two blokes who are proper sketchy. But when they mention where they're going, one's going, oh, yeah, that place, you don't want to go there. It's full of haints. Haints, he used the word haints, like ghosts, right?
Right.
He mentions that, which is our first indication there's something up. And most of this film is not a horror, is it? It's a straight Western. It's only the last act it turns to horror in quite a strong way.
Yeah, a lot of it kind of, I don't want to say it's slow, because I don't feel like it was slow, but it, you know, it is a talkie for sure in the middle of the film, I felt like. And like you said, just kind of a straight up Western. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it actually adds to the tension as you get more towards the supernatural elements.
Yeah, and some of the tension is Wishbone Cutter doesn't think they should be taking a woman along with them. Whereas the Diamond Expert thinks, who is called Amos, thinks they should. And he's quite antagonistic towards the woman, and she's kind of, she doesn't cook their dinner at one point. He says, why haven't you cooked? He goes, well, you didn't say, you know, and there's stuff like that. He just assumes she'd start cooking, you know, things like that.
Yeah. He didn't take too kindly to that.
No. Her character's name's Drusilla. And actually, I'm not a big fan of Sandra Locke, but I thought she did a really good job here. I do like her in this and Outlaw Josie Wales. And they're different characters. Outlaw Josie Wales, she's a much more innocent, younger character. And she's slightly more sort of world aware, though you're never quite sure at first because she doesn't speak much.
First when they come across her, she says she's been like pretty much violated. And I mean, just all sorts of horrible things have happened to her. So, you know, we feel pretty bad for her character at first, I think. She's interesting to say the least.
Yeah,
of course, all these guys are interesting.
Yeah, I have to say the couple of hicks that they meet, that's done really well. They're proper It's like watching Dukes of Hazzard.
It is. They're from Mayberry, right?
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun.
I like them,
but they're a bit sketchy. And in fact, later on, that we find out they've got dishonorable intentions, and they're trying to. And they're kind of saying, I want the woman first. He goes, but last time, you had the woman first last time. I want the woman first this time. They're kind of arguing. And it's interesting those two basically get sorted out by Wishbone, Moon, and Amos, frankly, in the end. They're kind of, you know, their shootouts and all that kind of business. It's kind of cool. As they get nearer the mountain, slightly more weird things start happening. In fact, Moon at one point says, This is ancient ground. I can't go here, you know, and things like that. So it starts to get a bit weirder. And the camera work indicates something's watching them, maybe, or something's going on. And characters do die. Let's put it that way. I don't want to spoil this. I don't actually want to say what the ending is of this. But there's a twist. There is a twist.
There is.
That you find out, which kind of is the horror, a horror twist, standard horror, you know, not standard, but a horror twist. So we find out something that's kind of interesting and sort of finishes it off. But I thought this was a solid movie.
I did too. I really enjoyed this one, Mark, and I'm very glad you recommended it to me. As you know, I'm a big fan of Westerns, and this is definitely now on my list. And I'm always looking for these horror Westerns because there's just so few of them, honestly. Even episodes like The Twilight Zone that were made back in the day, like if I can get a hold of any of those, anything like that, I'm always like, yes, finally, you know, supernatural Westerns. But this is a real quality one, right?
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, it's not great. It's not Outlaw Josie Wales or even High Plains Drifter great.
Right, I would agree with that.
It's better than you could possibly expect from an old, sketchy film that's on YouTube from the 70s, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And I have to say, I thought the script and the acting and the music was solid. It was particularly interesting to hear, the band on this. I was like, I was blown away when I saw that.
I thought,
and I think Sandra Locke is good too, and she often irritates me actually, but I in this, I thought she did a good job too as Drusilla. And also there's like an eagle motif. I will say that as you get nearer to the mountain, which is also called Demon Mountain sometimes, as we talked about the alternative titles, there's an eagle motif. So there's like almost like, is there an eagle spirit there? What's going on? Is all that going on? So
yeah,
solid movie. I haven't got much else to say about it. Any thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. I wish there was, as I mentioned at the very beginning, I wish there was a better version of this picture-wise. You know, there is a DVD that it was originally released by Mill Creek Entertainment, and then there's a couple of other ones, but apparently, from what I found, none of them are remastered. They all kind of had this same picture, which seems to be like a television cut. And the reason I say it's a television cut is like certain words are kind of like bleeped out, so you know it's been shown on television. But it's a real shame. There, like, I feel like there's got to be a good print of this somewhere that could be transferred to Blu-ray or DVD at some point. So, you know, if that ever comes about, that'd be great. But at least for now, like you said, we have it on YouTube, and that's pretty cool. Mark, do we want to rate this one before we move on?
I'm happy to rate it. What would you give this one?
I would give this a really solid 7. I really enjoyed it. You know, yeah. I think I've kind of said all about it. I need to, as far as the acting, and you know, you talked a lot about the actors. How about you?
Yeah, I think 7 seems like a good score. I have rated it 6 on Letterboxd, but I think that was a bit mean. I think it feels more like a 7. I enjoyed it, and it's really very watchable. I've watched it twice, and I will watch it again, especially if I can find a better cut.
Yeah,
but apparently Paramount, who put it out, really wasn't that impressed with it, and really wasn't that. It was only out for like a week or two in the cinemas, and not really that bothered. It was cut. Apparently, 6 seconds were cut when it was put out in the UK because there's a shot of horses falling down a mountainside. That's just not done in UK cinema at that time. So there's a small cut, but you know, nothing at all that affects your viewing pleasure. Yeah, or Joel is marring. It's fine. I think it's a slight story, but they fit it really well with both the script and the actors. I think every actor in this I really like. I like Wishbone Cutter as a character, and he definitely feels like he's in the world of Josie Wales.
Possibly High Plains Drifter. Yeah, I kind of go with Outlaw Josie Wales world. You know, now that you say it. I'm like, yeah, I can totally see that, or High Plains Drifter, but it definitely has that sort of 70s Western feel to me, you know, like early 70s. I like it though. It's like you say, you know, the story's not like, it's not crazy or anything like that, but it's just enough. And the actors, you know, their banter back and forth, really good. So yeah, I would definitely recommend people to check it out, especially if they also like Westerns and horror.
Yeah, and funny enough, I'm just scanning through some of the user reviews on IMDb, and someone actually says, this is kind of like Predator. You know, there's a small group where something's out there, and they kind of are becoming aware of it the further it goes on. So, in fact, it does have a very Predator kind of vibe. It isn't Predator or anything like that. Terrestrial, no, that's the wrong word, isn't it? Material, there's something else going on. There's a bit more supernatural than that, but it's interesting. Yeah, a solid film, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for recommending this, Mark.
Right, should we move on to our next one? Much more up to date, also written and directed by one person, so it's got a kind of similar sort of pedigree to Shadow of Sakura, but that person was JT Petty, and it's called The Burrows, made in 2008, and it was based on another short film by the same person called Blood Red Earth. And I could kind of see a short being the basis for this. I could kind of see, you know, the more horrific parts, if you just focus on those, that you could make a short with that, or a short would emerge from that, and then you could extend it into this. And I have to say, the extension was really good. It was a good script and great actors, so again, this totally worked.
Absolutely, man.
In terms of feel, it was quite like Bone Tomahawk, wasn't it?
It reminded me of that a lot, and also it kind of had a ravenous feel, but I do agree more like Bone Tomahawk, because at times it's kind of a vicious film, isn't it?
Very, very good. You know, at times it's nowhere near as vicious as Bone Tomahawk, it has to be said.
No, not that level
whatsoever. But
yeah, Bone Tomahawk just doesn't give, it doesn't care.
It doesn't care. Bone Tomahawk, and in many ways, when I first saw this, I think this feels like a cross between Bone Tomahawk and The Descent, the movie The Descent, in many respects. Yeah. It was kind of cool. It starts off almost like you think it's going to be like a lyrical drama in that a man's going to court a girl, but then it all kicks off because a family gets kind of dragged away, but in the dark, and everyone thinks it's Native Americans, and a posse forms with Clancy Brown at the lead. It's John Clay. It was so good to see. I didn't know Clancy Brown was in this, so it was a real pleasure. I thought it was going to be a cast of unknowns. And in fact, but I recognised two people in it. Clancy Brown, it was like the patriarch figure that was part of the posse, right? And he's convinced his Native Americans have kidnapped these people. Because what happened, I guess. I guess that's how these things played out. But they encounter... Sorry, go on.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it was always back and forth, I think, in the Wild West. Like, if you really look at the current history, you know, the Indians, it was the white settlers who would end up slaughtering Indians. And then the Indians would retaliate. And, you know, back and forth it went, unfortunately. It's pretty tragic, really.
And we kind of see that the Native Americans are not responsible at all for what's been going on. But we also this posse encounter a troop of Yankee soldiers, right?
Indeed.
Headed by the other face I recognize, which is Doug Hutchinson. Doug Hutchinson's got a horror pedigree because he was Eugene Toombs in the weird episodes of The X-Files about the stretchy guy.
Oh,
he
wow.
He was that stretchy guy.
I didn't recognize
him. I kind of recognized him, and I thought, I'll tell you who I thought it was at first. I thought, is that Paul Rudd? Because the way his hair was sort of creamed down, you know, flat, and his big moustache, from the nose upwards, he looks a lot like Paul Rudd. He does.
I agree. Very much so, in fact.
But then I looked up and I thought, oh my, that Doug Hutchinson. I haven't seen him in much. I know he's a bit of a creepy dude in real life, for reasons we're not going to. If you want to Google it, you can find out. It's sort of questionable. But he's great as Eugene Toombs in The X-Files. He also was in one of my favorite exploitation films called Punisher Warzone. And he was the brother of Jigsaw in that film, and he was like, his name was something like Mad Mickey or something, and if anyone called him to his face mad, he'd kill them, right? So it was that kind of character. It was complete psycho gangster kind of character. But in this, he's a much more rational, though sadistic person, right?
I like his character in here.
Yeah, his character was abominable. Essentially, they team up and they think, well, we got to find this family before it's too late. And they encounter a Native American brave out on his own, you know, and they kind of chase him down, whack him with a rifle in the face, and then start asking him what's happened and torturing him. And it's horrible.
It's brutal, man. I was cringing. I was really cringing.
I'm not quite sure what they were doing, but essentially they were doing something to his ankle and foot, but there was blood everywhere. And it was like, are they trying to pull the skin off of it? Are they just twisting a broken ankle? I couldn't work it out, but he was just screaming.
That was enough.
These are the soldiers. These are the soldiers under the command of Doug Hutchinson's character. And Doug Hutchinson also talks about, you know, makes jokes about Native Americans. He says, look at this tobacco bag. And he reveals it's the scrotum of a brave.
That was brutal, you know, man. Oh.
Yeah. And things like, which did happen. That sort of thing did happen. That happened.
It did. It's disturbing.
And at one point, two of the posse talked to each other. And one of the posse, interestingly, is a black fella, which is kind of unusual. And he's the cook. He was the cook as well for the Confederates, the Yankees. But he goes off. In the end, the posse leave the soldiers behind. They carry on their hunt, and these soldiers are just sort of being murderous, really. But at one point, one goes and talks to another and sort of says, "Has he talked yet?" And the other guy says, "I don't think that's even the point. I haven't asked them a question in half an hour," which kind of shows you they're just being sadistic, right?
Oh, yeah. I think everyone's just so sick of hearing him scream by that
point.
You know?
Well, John Clay, in the end, says, "I'm sick of hearing this guy scream. Stop it." Kind of like that. And there's a bit of a confrontation. But the main character is an Irishman called Coffee.
I thought that was an interesting choice, too.
Because
typically in these Westerns, you know, you do sort of get a bone saw kind of character, you know. But I think it was cool that they actually put, you know, someone of Irish origin. And also, you know, like you know, the cook character, in a way they can relate because they're both treated as less than human, you know?
Yeah. And they talk about there's dialogue along those lines. And they, you know, it's like, they're just not talking to me because I'm Irish. I'm an outsider. And he talks about how he was treated in New York, and the black guy goes, "Yeah, I know that feeling," which is fair enough. Right.
Yeah.
However, they don't treat him as a servant.
They don't treat him, they don't treat
him quite as bad. Not necessarily as an equal, but there's some respect there. Let's put it that way. It's not really explicit.
I mean, I don't think it takes place. I think it is like the West or, you know, California, not the American South. So that's good at least. You know, but still, it's just wild to think about. You know, classism is just crazy to me, Mark. I don't get it. Of course, being from the South, you know, we've studied it a lot in history here, and yeah, I just kind of shake my head, man. It's just, it's a real tragedy of just American history in general.
Well, the truth is a lot of people like to feel superior to other people. We all kind of do it in our own way. It's all
a human thing, but some
are worse than others. But you do get, there are some people that are literally, if you were to say we need equality, they feel like that's oppression to them because they used to have it being entitled. That's where it's bad, right? I mean, exactly. It's bad anyway, but, you know, that's the worst.
That's when it gets really bad, yeah.
Yeah, before actions, which make it even worse, kicking. But anyway, you know, that's not good to that. So these two guys, all these guys are going off sort of looking. And they also, there's also a bit of talking. Is it the Irishman that can talk? Native American, is it one of the others? It's one of the others, isn't it? They start finding out that, they say, no, it wasn't a tribe that took him, it was something. And he says that word, he says the miners? He says, no, the word is not when humans dig, it's when animals dig. It's more like burrowers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Says, that's what he's saying. There's a tribe called the burrowers. And essentially, it kind of turns out that there's some weird species out there that kind of live in the ground. And the Native Americans know about him, but they used to live on buffalo. But now the white settlers have depleted the buffalo. They've turned to eating humans or anything they can find, I guess.
Right.
Hunting in the Native Americans and then some of the settlers. We also kind of find out eventually that one tribe has kind of figured out a way to hunt them, which is they find that they've... Right, I should say... We get, we should spoil it. I don't want to spoil it entirely.
Yeah,
I don't.
I think we can get around it. Like, we can talk about the creatures perhaps, but maybe in vague terms. Should we do that? What do you think?
Yeah, let's try that.
Okay.
But it turns out these burrows are not a Native American tribe. They're an entirely different thing. They're a bit like the creatures from The Descent, but they're even more animalistic. Humanoid, are they? They're a bit like, they reminded me, I have to say, their face reminded me a bit of, you know, the leech creature in The X-Files?
Going back to X-Files,
a bit like that. And essentially what we find out, what they do is they kind of catch people, but kind of drug them, inject a toxin in them. And I assume it's the toxin they produce themselves because they're obviously not intelligent or, you know, they're not humans, which puts people into like a weird coma. And then they half bury people. And then once they've been laying still for a while, and the suggestion is they've started to decompose even.
These
creatures come back and then suck on them. And the sound effects are just gross.
They are. Man, I have to say, though, it's effective, you know.
Yeah, and the creatures are. Yeah.
Made me think of the spider, you know, and the fly, like it injects the fly and then the...
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. It's a liquid feeder, right? It's a liquid feeder. But they're like, for example, their knees are backwards and they crawl on all fours. And the shape of their limbs isn't particularly human, or their bodies. They've got a head and eyes, but the mouth is just a hole, really. Things like that, right? That looked quite effective.
I was going to ask what you thought of the creatures and the design, like, and did that kind of work for you?
Yeah, they were almost, it wasn't quite, they looked entirely organic, but had a bit of an alien vibe, a bit, because their limbs went in different, the joints in their limbs were not the same as human, you know, the knees bent backwards instead of forwards, for example.
Yeah.
So it was almost like half human, half grasshopper.
Grasshopper. That's a good analogy.
Something like that. It was very weird. It was very weird. And their trunks were elongated past their legs, I think, as well.
Strange looking.
They were strange looking. And what we found out is one particular tribe, the Yuta tribe, had figured out that if they can find victims in the ground, they can put another toxin in those victims. So when the burrowers feed, they drugged and passed out. And apparently when the sun comes up, they disintegrate.
Right. Which sounds like vampires.
It sounds like, do sound exactly like vampires in many respects.
Yeah.
And basically there's a big confrontation. So don't want to go into it too much, but it's very exciting, tense, scary, and so on. Isn't there? There's also a few gunfights earlier on, which whittles down the numbers of the people involved. They also, right near the end, they find a Native American woman who tells them a bit more about what's going on. So there's various other Native Americans that are kind of trying to help them. As well as the Ute that are just trying to kill the burrowers, don't really care about the guys. In fact, at one point, these guys can only talk French, but they keep calling them like little fish because they're using them as bait, right?
That definitely made me think of Prey, you know, that whole part.
Yeah.
I thought that was done really well.
Yeah. So essentially, the numbers get around, and John Coffey finds a way to get out of all this, and he kind of gets rescued. There's all sorts of limb damage. It has to be said to make you wince.
Absolutely, man.
And a lot of it was set at night, but this is a decent print, so it wasn't too bad. But he gets away and he encounters, and basically he was trying to find out what the poison is that the Ute use, because if they meet any more of these burrowers, they've got a way of trying to fight back, right? Oh, I should mention they do find one of the women of the people that got kidnapped. And they think she's dead, don't they? They find her kind of half buried.
Yeah.
But she actually starts moving, and they can hear a weird clicking noise, too. And stuff kicks off around that, too.
Oh, man, does it ever.
Yeah. When it gets... Oh, no, actually, I'm going into spoiler territories. Yeah, so we won't talk about the ending.
Yeah, we won't spoil it.
But, yeah, it's a really well-made film. Looks good. Good acting, good script, right?
Yeah, I definitely think it is well made. You know, my issue with it is, first, the CG, I think, is pretty bad. And then
the creatures, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And then second, like, the pacing is very strange, like, particularly through the middle of the film. I don't know if they were trying to make it sort of more like a Western here, but the dialogue is just not there for me. What do you think, Mark? Or maybe I'm being overly critical.
I didn't have any problems with it in terms of dialogue. Okay. I thought it was solid. I thought the characters came across quite well, and I was kind of okay with it. You know, I don't really have any problems. I think it's one of those films that you don't expect much. So when it's better than you expect, you're really like, wow, this is great.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of how I was, you know. You know, for like Ravenous and things like that, I was like really surprised, actually, and Shadow of Chikara as well. And I don't know what the budget was for this, but I don't even remember this coming out, to be honest. And, you know, in 2008, I was a pretty big movie goer at that point to theaters.
It came out at some festivals. I don't know if it got an initial.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it would have. I'd be very surprised if it didn't. Let me just have a look.
It could have even been like just a really short window in the theater, you know. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, it did get many reviews, and it just says it got mostly positive reviews when it came out. So it suggests it was out in the cinemas. And a lot of people really like the cinematography and screenplay.
I do agree with that. I think the cinematography is tremendous. Like,
it looks tremendous, yeah.
Yeah, oh, it looks great. And, you know, I think the actors all do a really good job. But, yeah, it had some problems for me, but I still enjoyed it overall. You know, I think it's just something with the pacing was off for me.
Okay, I didn't feel that, I have to say. I didn't feel that. It felt like it could have been shorter. I would agree with that. And I was kind of surprised when these two groups, which had the same job pretty much, just went their separate ways. But
yeah,
I think it was more that John Clay, Clancy Brown's character, really didn't like the captain.
Oh, yeah, they didn't get along at all.
No, so I think that was probably why. But it wasn't really explored. It's like, because they nearly came to shooting each other, really.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. Guns were pointed. But no, I thought this was a solid film. I really haven't got much. I honestly didn't even mind the CG. I appreciate it wasn't great. But they also did mix some model work in with these creatures, didn't they? It wasn't just CG.
Yeah. I feel the shots that were far away actually worked really well with the CG.
It was
really
the mid-range ones where you saw them moving fast that it was a bit odd. It was when they were feeding, it was fine.
Now that stuff was brutal.
Yes. Yes.
They did that really well, man.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's good and bad here, I feel like, for sure. But, I mean, again, if you're looking for horror westerns, there's not a lot out there. So I have to appreciate it for sure. I just kind of want to give our audience fair warning that, you know, maybe don't go in thinking this is going to be like the ultimate horror western, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Looking at it a bit more, I actually don't think it did get a cinema release. I think it was just released to DVD.
That's what I'm seeing here, too.
Which it feels a bit too good for that. But we're in a world where that happens. Like Prey, for example, we thought was excellent. That didn't get a cinema release.
Which is crazy to me. Yeah, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I've got much more to say about it. I would recommend it. Yeah.
Do you want to give it a rating? Or
I'm happy to rate it. I'd give it an 8. And I think it could, you know, somewhere between, it's closer to a 7 than a 9, but I'd give it a solid 8. I thought it was a solid film.
So you really, really like this one, man.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, your rating's a little higher than mine, to say the least. I'm going to give it, like, and I don't feel like this is bad because this is middle of the road, right? But I'm going to say it's a very good 5. Very, very close to a 6. But I don't want to say it's a bad film. For me, it was just the pacing and the CG that really hurt it, because the film has a lot of great ideas. I just don't feel like those ideas are totally realized. But I still recommend seeing it.
Yeah, what I will say is I don't think it's quite as rewatchable as Wishbone Cat, because it was quite bleak all the way through.
It is
torture was hard to watch or, you know, listen to even. But as a horror film, it was way more of a horror film than Shadow of Shikara, in my opinion. It was a bit grim. A lot of things were grim in 2008. That's just how stuff, you know, TV was grim, films were grim. So, you know. I kind of get that. I really like this. I think I also probably give it a point for Clancy Brown being in it as well, frankly.
And he's tremendous in it.
He is tremendous.
I like all the actors in it, and the acting is it's great all around. I don't know. In a way, I want to give it a 6, but man, like, I got to say, I enjoyed, like, you know, Shadow of Chikara more. But at the same time, there's a lot to love here. It's just the overall execution of it for me.
I'll be honest, I think I enjoy Shadow of Chikara more, But I think this was a better film. But in terms of enjoyability, I think I enjoyed Shadow of Chicago more. Yeah.
This film is better made for sure. And I think for like modern audiences, it's going to be a lot more watchable.
Yeah. 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 Okay. I think we're about done there.
Yeah, man, this has been fun. I always love going back to the Wild West. You know, I am a frequent player of like Red Dead Redemption 2. Even now I find new stuff in that game, and you know, it's been out for like 3 years. And just the whole genre is fun, you know. Like one film I didn't mention that I will real quick, like Sundown, what is it called? Sundown the Vampire Retreat, I believe. That one's
That's good. There's a sequel as well, isn't it? It's pretty good, if I remember rightly.
I think there may be. I know Bruce Campbell is in the that film, and I haven't seen it in a while, but I love it.
Actually, I'm starting to think Sundown the Retreat is the sequel. Let me just have a quick look.
That might be,
Let me just have a look. Sundown it's a the Retreat.
1989 film.
Yeah, yeah, it's an 80s film for sure.
And,
The Vampire in Retreat. I thought there was a sequel, but maybe I got that wrong.
You know, another really good, like, modern Western horrors is also John Carpenter's Vampires, which he didn't direct, but his name is attached to it. I think he's the producer on it.
It's fun.
Good yeah, one. That has James Woods in it. I love that.
No, one. He did direct it. Yeah.
He did. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. See, I'm mistaken.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a board game that is pretty much that film. It's called Vampire Hunters, and it feels like that film. For example, there is a device you can fire into a vampire and winch him out into the sun, which is what they do in that film, right?
That's amazing.
The only place I've ever seen that is that film. So this game must be ripping that off, or
it has to be
paying homage or whatever. No, I was wrong. There isn't a sequel to that. I'm thinking of something else. But yeah, there's Sundown the Vampire Retreat is a solid film. Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. Can't remember the specifics, but I do remember enjoying it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're out there, these kind of...
Another one I'm kind of want to see, and I could be completely wrong, is I believe one of the Tremors sequels is set in the Old West. So the Graboids are terrorizing the old, cowboys. I think there's one. I've not seen it, but it sounds great.
Yeah, we need to do a Tremors episode, because I think there's a...
I would totally be up for a Tremors episode. I think there's seven. But we'd have to do it in two parts.
Yeah, we would.
But I'd definitely be up for that. That's maybe for sure. Maybe we'll do it next time.
Yeah, maybe so. That would be fun, because that's a series I've thought about watching that forever, and it's been on my list for years.
One I was thinking of mentioning, but I can't, because it isn't a horror Western. It's a Western, but it's got horror credentials because it's directed by Sam Raimi, is The Quick and the Dead, which I've watched recently. That is really fun.
Good.
That is
film.
So fun. Yeah. What a great film that is. Yeah. It's so enjoyable. Man. And it's bonkers as anything, but it's... Gene Hackman is really good bad guy, and, there's various other characters that are really interesting. Russell Crowe's elite. And this is before he was proper famous, before he did L.A. Confidential and Gladiator and stuff. He was good in it as like the moody, No, yeah. He wasn't. He was basically a pacifist, but he kind of got drawn into the gunfighting. Is the idea. man, great film. Really good film. Horror.
not horror, but a great Western. I mean, there's so many great Western films out there. You know, for years I've thought about like doing a Western themed podcast just for movies. And I think there are a few out there. Like, unfortunately, like there was Westerns with Dad, but unfortunately the dad passed away. I don't know if it's still out there, but if you can find it, and you're looking for like resources for really good Western movies, that's a fun one. But
yeah, there's a TV series that's meant to be really good, set in the Old West, called something like 1883. I've heard that's really good. And there used to be the old Deadwood.
Deadwood.
That was a lot of fun, but very sweary.
Yeah, you definitely do not want to watch that one around the kids.
Don't watch that with your parents or children. I enjoyed these two a lot.
I did too. And Mark, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. Should we wrap it up here?
Yeah, let's wrap it up here.
All right. Thanks again, everyone, for listening to the 90 Nations of Horror. You can find us at www.unhpodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook. There are a lot of great people there. And I got to get back there, Mark, very soon. I've been off social media for a little bit. So
Yeah, let me just say the name of the group. So I imagine anyone listening to this probably kind of might well be on it, but we'll see. It is facebook.com/groups/UN of Horror. Very friendly group. If there are trolls, yeah, we immediately exclude them, but no indeed, one's really like that. Everyone's about the horror, which is great.
Yeah, which I love. You know, seriously, I'm not blowing smoke or anything. Just some of the nicest people who are into horror, you know, who are just around, in my opinion. And we appreciate all of you guys who take the time to post on there. We do have a Twitter, but we haven't updated it in forever, which is my fault. And I'm
Facebook's a much more two-way thing, isn't it? I feel
it
so.
Is. Yeah, like that's the thing about a lot of other social media, you know. And there's so many services now. I guess we could get on each and every one, but
no, that's a lot. Yes, we're not doing that.
I agree. All right. Well, thanks everyone, and thank you so much, Mark. This has been Jason,
and this has been Mark,
and we'll see y'all later right here on the United Nations of Horror.
Yeehaw! Don't resist.
Oh man, my throat's gonna hurt all day from doing that.
Made in Georgia. Made in America. On these shores.